Hi, everybody. We'd like to start in just 1 minute. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kurt Pritz. I'm a member of the ICANN staff. I want to thank you for coming here today, we think will be a great session, and taking your time late in an afternoon and missing, I think for most of you, not watching the soccer match. We're here for a very interesting purpose. Christine, if we could have the first slide. That's great. So you'll forgive me for saying, and by prefacing this with anticipating the nearly imminent launch of the new GTLD program, what measures should brand owners take to protect their trademarks leading up to the launch of the new GTLD process, and then what measures should they take in the case of the launch of each individual new TLD? There's a variety of new protections offered with the introduction of new GTLDs, and the panelists here have discussed those in depth, helped develop them, have a understanding of their strengths and weaknesses, and I think one of the reasons we're here is to provide advice as to how they may be best used, and maybe offer some tweaks here as we get near to the end. So if I can have the next slide. I think one of the victories of this new GTLD process for the ICANN community has been the collaboration of the ICANN community, different stakeholder groups in developing solutions for very difficult problems. And the intellectual property constituency of ICANN, this happened so long ago, it was called the intellectual property constituency, and now it's called the intellectual property stakeholder group, came together to start with essentially a blank sheet of paper and develop a recommended set of rights protection mechanisms for the applicant guidebook. And this is just one of many cross-functional, cross-stakeholder group teams that formed in a remarkably short period of time to solve very difficult problems. And this slide just indicates the timeline since the ICANN board approved the policy recommendations of the GNSO to launch the process. And the blue squares down below are the many teams that have come together to work on solutions to implementation problems. I think it's a success of the ICANN model. Can I have the next slide? So the goal of all those teams is to create an environment that is safer, more friendly to registrants, it promotes competition, but also provides protection in an improved environment over what exists now. And one mapping of the increased protections for trademark holders, and trademarks are protected not just for the trademark holders; they're intended to protect the public too. Are the increased number of rights protection mechanisms? So, there's protections at the top level, additional protections at the top level for GTLD names, such as the post-delegation dispute mechanism. Doing background checks of potential applicants, the legal rights objection, and then at the second level, The new mechanisms include the Uniform Rapid Suspension System, the Trademark Clearinghouse, which is used to support both the Sunrise and IP claims process, and then FIC Who Is. So I think that the people on this panel and others came together and created this set of protections, and now we want to talk about how we might best utilize them, what the strengths and weaknesses of them are. So as we go into the launch of new GTLDs, we're all armed with the best set of protections we can derive. So with that, with the easy stuff's over, and now I'm going to turn this meeting over to Nick Wood, who I'm very honored to have here. He and I have become pretty darn good friends through this. Well, I think so anyway. He's the managing director of Cum Laude. And Nick, thanks very much for agreeing to chair this group and doing the work to get it together.
Thank you. Okay, everyone. This session is about looking forward. You may not be actually looking forward to the new GTLDs, but I want us to look forward. There's been a lot of looking back, and this session is not about the looking back. We could dive right down into the murky details of should the IRT have had a travel grant or the use of capitalization in the STI report. We could do all of that, but that would be wasting the somewhat considerable talents that we have in the panel today. So let me introduce you to them, and then we're going to go a little bit further. And what we're going to try to do is to run through the process as it's mapped out. So we're going to talk a little bit about what brand specialists are looking to do in the period from now until the day that a list of applied for strings is published. And then we're going to look a little bit at what to do just after the list of strings are published. And then we're going to look maybe 3 or 5 years in advance. There's going to be loads and loads of time for you guys to ask questions as we go through this. I suppose that these microphones are working, so please come along, because I should say that the session, I think, is being recorded. There's a chat room. There'll be a transcript published afterwards. So if you do come to the front, please carefully, clearly say who you are and the organisation that you represent. Because when I go back through these things sometimes, it's really frustrating not quite to be able to get the name of the person. Okay, so let me introduce you to the panel. And I'm going to lean right out here so I can see at the far end Debbie Hughes. And I'm going to make sure I get everyone's title right. Now, Deborah is the senior counsel for the American Red Cross International Treaty Organization. Next to Deborah is a complete ICANN newbie. He's never been here before, and he has been a little bit puzzled by some of the acronyms, and we suggested that if anyone's got any really detailed questions about DAG4, then he's going to be the person to take first chance at it. Now, his name is Richard Waterhouse. He's the chief executive of the Royal Institute of British Architects Enterprises Division. And that's a cash-making business. Next to Richard, we have Susan Payne. Now, Susan used to be the brand protection manager of BBC Worldwide, but because she didn't have anything else to do, she's now really assumed full responsibility for the BBC's brand protection, all in all. Next to Sue, we have Charlotte Walters from Orange. Charlotte's a legal advisor with Orange. You're all familiar with Orange? Yep. No? Okay. Think of a telecoms company, then double it, and that's what Orange is. They are a big telecoms company. We then have Christina Rosette. Christina is the special counsel from Covington and Burling. She'll be very familiar to many of you because she's one of the IPC's reps on the GNSO. And we'll tell you about that later, Richard, what that means. She's been intimately involved in the rights protection mechanisms, but she also advises large corporates. Next to Christina, We have Caroline Perrier from Nestlé. Nestlé is the world's largest food company, and Caroline is the Brand IP Council. And then finally, sitting next to me here, is David Taylor, who's a partner at Hogan Lovells and also an IPC rep on the GNSO. And also, he spends most of his working time advising large corporates. So there's a weakness about what we're going to talk about today. It's pretty much that it's a big brand point of view. We thought about trying to find some smaller brands to come in, but one of the things that may come up today is the fact that the application fee is $185,000. So we're not sure at the moment how many smaller brands will be going for this. Okay, so let's begin. Can we just click through? Here's a slide of Canon. A lot of you know that Canon announced, perhaps somewhat optimistically, back in March of this year, that they're going to be applying for a new GTLD. They said they're beginning the acquisition process. So what did they mean by that? What are the benefits that they perceive? Can I have the next slide, please? This is what they said. Now, you can all read it, but I'm going to whip through it quite quickly because there are people in the... there'll be people who are listening to a transcript only. They said, we feel it will enable us to consistently provide high reliability and high quality, the expression of brand quality within the world of online communications. They said, utilising web addresses such as productname.canon, servicename.canon, and specificmessage.canon, which do not require additional characters such as .com, .net, or country-specific two-character codes, would enable us to convey our brand in a straightforward fashion. This would support the effective deployment and utilisation of cross-media marketing. And they said, perhaps somewhat optimistically, customers will arrive at their intended destinations without having to rely on the use of a search engine. And I should just add that the interviews were undertaken by a reporter from Managing Intellectual Property's new online bulletin, who may indeed be in the room. Is he here? Are you here, Finn? No, not here, because we could have tried to pin him down and say anything else they said. Okay, can I have the next slide, please? Thank you. So, Canon, I think in summary, they said, we feel that a new GTLD will play an indispensable role amid the major changes to occur in brand communication. An indispensable role. So the first question to the panel is about the extent to which they agree with that statement. Is it right? We'll come back to all of you later. Caroline, can you begin by telling us a little bit about your work with Nestlé and then give us your view to this question? And before we go into that, I should just say, and this is a kind of standard or standardised ICANN disclaimer, everyone here is speaking in their individual capacity. So if you want to rush out and report it, come up and talk to them first. They're speaking in individual capacity, not on behalf of their companies.
Thank you, Nick. Three points, actually, I would like to bring up this afternoon regarding the need of the GTLDs and why a big company would be interested in. And we've been talking for it for a while. And then there were three, let's say, main advantages that were brought to the brand owners. The first one was that you can have your entire communication under one single extension. It's great. You just have .dot, for example, .dot canon. Well, this is okay if you have one main brand, but if you have several brands, first, you have brands that are not sold under the company name, so you cannot link them in your communication, or maybe you don't want to link them. Then you have brands that you license, or you have joint ventures. You are not always selling your products other under one same brand. And for a company like Nestlé, we have about 5,000 brands. They are not all linked to Nestlé, and we don't want, for example, to mix pet food with human food. So it's not the biggest solution on earth if you really want to put on a domain name strategy. And of course, we have different countries, and you have to tackle the sensibility of the company name in the different countries. So going worldwide is really difficult. The second point was that this is great. You will be able to get rid of your CCTLDs and the major GTLDs in 2 years' time. Nice. But if you sell your company, and I'm taking another example of Kraft and Cadbury. You know Kraft Food is a big chocolate or confectionery company. They bought Cadbury Chocolate Company. What if Cadbury had an extension .Cadbury? They do a lot of promotion, 10 years, 20 years on the .Cadbury. Suddenly, they sold to somebody else. They have to start all over again. Is that the solution? And the third thing is the generic name. People came also and said, this is great. You can really target your field, your topic, where you're working on. I'm sure many of you have a Nesquik drink in the morning. You mix the Nesquik powder with milk. Okay, are you going to go for dot .milk, dot .beverages, dot .food, dot .nutrition? And then if you speak Spanish, what do you look for? So at the end of the day, we have so many possibilities. I'm not so sure it will really help the brand owners. And the last thing I would like to say is, and it was a question I discussed with Nick, when is the good time to go on with a GTLD, with a new GTLD, like a dot brand? This is really difficult to assess at this point because we don't know how the users will look at it, if they will really find this is the solution. Like, I want my Nesquik drink and I want to know what is inside, so I go to dot food, or they will go on Google and Yahoo and search for it. So there are so many questions we have, and I don't know the answer to that, that it's probably why we are here and we are trying to tackle some issues before the launch of the new GTLDs.
You may. You need to get to the microphone.
My name is John Berard. I'm a consultant in San Francisco. It's just me and my computer. What's the difference between .canon and canon.com? I mean, you're investing a fair bit of emotional value into the names you have. And then if you're a public company, wouldn't it be good to be able to link various products so as to create more corporate or perhaps share price synergy?
Yeah, it could be, but it's a strategy, and maybe it's a strategy you once want to take, but maybe not all of them. And I think it's why it's difficult to really assess whether it's good to have it not. It might be good for some companies and not for others, but I don't think in 20 years we just will have dot something.
Thanks, Karen. So you've got a view that you're definitely not decided yet, and you can still see a lot of issues in front of you. Richard, can I ask you, can you tell us a bit about your work at the RIBA and your views? Could a GTLD enhance your brand? Could it become indispensable to you?
Thanks, Nick. Firstly, thanks for inviting me here. I find myself in a bit of a bear pit because I really don't know much about the detail of how this all works. Our point of view purely comes from how we face the market, how we can help the consumer. The RIBA is the Royal Institute of British Architects. It is both a membership organisation with membership mainly in the UK, but around 6,000 architects around the world. It's also a charity. One of the things that we've been trying to do is to focus our activity on improving the built environment and showing how architects in particular help improve the built environment. One of the ways we've been doing that is to build the brand, to reinforce the quality that goes alongside the RIBA. And something like the GTLD program, I think for us, is both a threat but also an opportunity. I think it will help us to promote architects and also to maximise the brand strength we can have through this IT movement. In the UK and in a number of other countries, the title architect is protected by law, and we're looking for ways to reinforce that protection. How can we give consumers the strength of knowledge that when they're working with an organisation, they are suitably accredited, in this case through the Architects Registration Board in the UK? And we can use our brand on something like .RIBA to actually give some consumer protection. That's the strength that we can add through this particular program. It will allow us to promote not just architects, but also the activities of the RIBA, which are many and varied. It will also promote individuals as well as companies, something that has been a challenge to us, and also provide us with some commercial gain, I hope, and that's something that we'll maybe talk about a little later on today. But one of the difficulties for the RIBA has to be something Nick has already mentioned, which is the price of the application. It is a sensible thing in terms of barrier to stop any silly applications, but for organisations like ourselves as a charity, it does cause us problems.
Thanks, Richard. David, you work for a large international law firm. How are lawyers looking at this?
Thanks, Nick. When I was just thinking about how to reply to this, I was looking on my BlackBerry because I had a quote, which I wrote down quite a few years ago, about there being three types of people. People who make things happen, people who follow what happens, and people who wonder what happened. And I thought that was quite appropriate because that does seem to summarise in a nutshell what a lot of brand owners are going through. So, I mean, certainly in my experience looking at this, we do a lot of domain name work, we're doing quite a bit of strategic advice to clients. Many of them are still completely unaware of what's going on. I think that comes through time and time again. If you actually look at the comments that are filed on DAG version 2, version 3, etc., there's very few brand owners there commenting, and there's a heck of a lot of brand owners across the world. So a large proportion still are completely unaware of what's going on. Those that are aware, many of those are very scared about what this can mean. Richard there mentioned there is obviously the opportunity, but it's this fear of potential cyber squatting coming through. Some of them just don't care whatsoever. We've spoken to quite a few people, and they really just don't care about what's going on. It does not mean anything to them at this point in time. And then some are really thinking about it. They are thinking about it, and they're thinking about how they can use it and how they can make use of this potential opportunity. So that's the main things, and I think one comment in addition there is that cost always comes up. And it's one of the first thing a brand owner says. They say, well, it's $185,000. This is ridiculous. You know, these domain names cost $10, don't they? And you try and explain what's involved in the $185,000. But I sort of come back to the idea that if you look at Toys R Us, and they bought Toys.com for $5.1 million. So if they're willing to buy Toys.com for $5.1 million, I'm guessing, and I have no idea, but they might well have $185,000 up their pocket to go for Dot Toys, but that raises many issues.
Thanks, David. Could I have the next slide, please? Okay. Let's suppose that the guidebook has been published and the evaluation questions are out there in the registry operator's contract. Then, Sue, you kind of live and breathe all of this brand protection stuff, I know. Can you tell us something of what your role is and the messages you're communicating to your colleagues about the new GTLD program?
Yes, I'm a trademark lawyer at the BBC. Formerly, I was the brand protection manager at the BBC's commercial subsidiary, BBC Worldwide. So I've been sort of living and breathing this now for a good couple of years or so. Just first to introduce the company, in case people don't know, the BBC is the UK's public service broadcaster. So it's publicly funded by basically the UK public who pay a licence fee. We operate radio and TV channels. We've got an online platform on bbc.co.uk and bbc.com. We're a maker of programmes and exporter of programmes overseas. Through group companies and licensees, we make DVDs, books, magazines, licensed merchandise relating to our programmes. So somewhat similar to Nestle, really, we've got the issue of numerous brands. There's not, you know, one single brand that we're looking to protect. So that in, for example, the trademark space, we'll have trademarks for, you know, our obviously core brand, but also channel brands, services like BBC News, BBC iPlayer, program names like Top Gear, Doctor Who, Dancing with the Stars, Teletubbies, and then even sort of characters or locations within programs like the Daleks from Doctor Who or the Stig from Top Gear. And basically, you know, in order to protect those trademarks, we've got a sort of, you know, a wide portfolio of brands. We've got over 800 unique marks in more than 100 countries. Similarly, on the domain name side, we've got, give or take, sort of 4,000 or so domain names, the vast majority of which are defensive and we're not using. And I would say that's probably in line with many other brand owners. So in terms of the sort of new GTLD process, from my point of view, there's sort of two decisions, really. The first is, you know, to register or not to register a GTLD. And that could either be .generic brand, so a sort of industry term or something, or .brand. And then separately, and these are not necessarily mutually exclusive, is then, you know, what do you do about the individual platforms which launch the various new GTLDs that other people will be launching? And to what extent are you going to register domain names within those? And it, really, my role in the run-up is to work with my colleagues in the company to come up with an internal strategy that we can get agreed at the appropriate level, which basically means consulting with relevant people in various parts of the business, so sort of marketing strategy, online exploitation, that kind of thing. And my experience has been that the first challenge is actually getting people to engage in the first place. Most people I've been working with kind of glaze over at the moment you mention the term domain name. I've been sending sort of documents and emails, maybe send a sort of 10-page, you know, briefing paper, which you then summarise in a single-page email, and you'll get a response back going, can you summarise this in a paragraph for me, because it's all very complicated and I don't want to read it. So really, the first challenge is getting people in a room so that you can talk to them and explain to them what this means, because it's quite a complicated issue to distill down into a paragraph. And basically, you know, working with people to come up with an agreed strategy and get it approved at the appropriate level in the company, because obviously no one really wants to be the person who gets blamed when it all goes wrong, and you need to have the buy-in from the right level at your organisation. And depending on the size of your organisation and its complexity, will depend on what that right level is. So in relation to whether to register a .gtld, I'm not really going to talk about the generic terms because other people on the panel are, but in terms of the branded ones, it's really, first of all, you know, is there a kind of a business desire? Does anyone have a kind of positive marketing strategy for using this? And kind of, you know, there may be people in the room and maybe people on the panel who may have one, but I've certainly been consulting with many sort of my opposite numbers at other organisations, particularly in the media industry, and I'm yet to find anyone who says that their business is crying out for this and they want this. So that's the first thing. You know, then to consider what the risks are. What's the risk of a third party applying? What's the likelihood of being able to successfully challenge any third party who applies, either by a dispute procedure, objection procedure, or by a legal action? And again, that's going to vary from brand to brand, really. If you know that you're operating in an area where there's your brand and a number of other companies who are using either identical or similar brands for other fields of activity, you may need to get into the process earlier than if you know that you're the only one. The issue that Caroline mentioned, you know, the single location for legitimate content, you know, is this going to provide a single location for legitimate content? And again, it might do for some people, but not necessarily for all. In our business, we've got multiple brands. We've also got multiple legitimate sources for content. So we've got, obviously, our own, the BBC's platform. We've got group companies. We've got independent producers who make programmes for us. We've got overseas broadcasters we sell the programmes to. We've got licensees who make merchandise. We've got retailers. How far do you go if you have a .BBC or whatever, .branded platform? How far do you want to go in letting third parties that you don't really control operate in that space? It's, you know, not a straightforward decision. And then, you know, we have also our own sort of particular internal vagaries, which is that, you know, we need to make a distinction between what's publicly funded content, which is paid by the UK public, and what's commercial activity. And so we do that by using the bbc.co.uk platform for the UK public service activity. And the commercial activity, either within the UK or outside of the UK, is on bbc.com. And bbc.com is a similar website, but if you access that outside the UK, which is the site you would see outside the UK, it does things like it carries advertising, which we absolutely cannot do within the UK because of the charter of the organisation. So again, there's those issues to sort of think about in terms of how would you make the relevant distinctions if you're moving into a different space. How to operate. I mean, you know, can you do it internally or do you need an external supplier? I suspect most brand owners have no idea how to do this for themselves, and you'll need an external supplier to do it for you. And I don't know, but I suspect there's probably quite a limited pool of people that you'd trust to look after your brand for you in this new space. So again, you know, that might be a factor you take into account in deciding, you know, how early you engage in the process. And then everyone's been mentioning, obviously, the cost, not just the cost of the application fee, but also possibly the cost if it goes to an auction, which could skyrocket. I've seen estimates of the cost to actually set up and run, plus the application fee, of more like $500,000 a year for the first year. And then you also, of course, need your kind of fighting fund for things like legal objections, $10,000 to $23,000 to do a legal rights objection, or court action if someone else is applying for your brand as a dot brand, and you need to challenge it. I could go on. I mean, the next... yeah.
I think people have got a sort of inkling that this isn't something that you're looking forward to with a great deal of enthusiasm. However, you did mention a number of things which brought Fred down right from the back of the room. So, Fred, would you like to ask your question? Because there's something...
Thanks a lot. I'm Fred Feldman. I'm from Mark Monitor. We're a brand protection company, and we service some of the world's largest companies.
Can I just check? Can you hear?
Okay. Is this microphone... No. Here, I'll try this. Okay, so I'm Fred Feldman. I'm from Mark Monitor. We're a brand protection company, and we service some of the world's largest companies. And as part of that, we're actually a registrar, a domain name registrar. So we did a survey of 100 customers, roughly 100 customers, 92 respondents. And I just wanted to magnify some of the things that David said and some of the things that you said, because they're kind of actually told in the survey, which is of the people who are sort of clueless, there are about 16% of the people who are clueless and don't know what they're going to do here at all. In fact, when asked about whether they were aware, 16% said no. When asked, you know, will they apply or not, this is kind of interesting to me. 22% of them said they would. 23% of them said they would. 22 no, and 55 are still working on that. In terms of usage, which is, you know, gets to, you know, what you were talking about, there's a range of usage. Approaching 70% said that it was defensive, and by defensive, it doesn't mean that you can have it remain fallow. It means that you're going to put it into the root, and you're going to put some things there, but you're probably not going to drive traffic there, because that's kind of a big task. Just over 10% said that they were going to do it for internal use, internal and partners, about 20%. Internal partners and customers, about 30%. And those weren't mutually exclusive. They could choose more than one, because if you look at this, it might be an evolution. And
Fred,
I guess,
can I just ask, is this published? Can you refer to people?
Yeah, it's on Circle ID, actually. If you look on Circle ID, our product marketing person, Elisa Cooper actually posted it, so it's available there. I think more interestingly, and it's probably getting to some of the stuff that folks are going to talk about, and I'll just get this all out at once so that I can not come back up here and bother you again. 75% of our customers said that their costs are going to increase with respect to protecting their brand, and I'm sure you guys are going to talk about that. What we didn't ask them, which probably would have been more interesting, I think, though, if you look at it from a marketing perspective, is what effect is this going to have on your search engine marketing costs? Because I think that's really where the money is. I think, you know, it's sort of mouse droppings, if you think of $185K when you consider an advertising budget. But I'll get off stage. The last thing I will say, though, is when asked about specific extensions that they would register in, there wasn't a single one that that rated above 15% in terms of intent to register secondary names. So
that was at the second level.
Yep. So just some stats for you, and I didn't mean to speak for so long, but I thought it might be interesting.
Okay. Let's have another question, then I'll go back to the panel. Philip.
Thanks. It follows up very much, I think, on the observations we've just heard from the BBC. I just tried an experiment and typed in BritishAirways.aero. Some of you may know the AERO extension exists. If you do that, you resolve to BritishAirways.com. If you type in BritishAirways.travel, it resolves to BritishAirways.com, which I think says a lot about brand identity and where you are today. And so my question is, for the likes of, the BBC, I'm a great advocate of the BBC news site. It's a regular, visitation often during the day for me, like many others. And I think you've done exceptionally well in creating your identity online in that. And it's a question for yourself and any other member of the panel, actually. You have spent lots of money in identifying a certain place where we can now found you very successfully. And the costs of moving that, the costs of the promotion to move that, are going to be significant. And had you started 6 years ago and .bbc had been an option then, maybe decisions could have been different. But they're not today. And I wonder just how much that is part of the thinking in terms of the cost benefit of a dot brand.
I would say yes. For us, it probably is certainly part of the thinking. I should say we haven't actually reached a final decision on, we're probably still in that 50-odd percent who are yet to decide. But certainly, yes, when I've been talking to people about, do they see this as a good thing? Do they want to do it? Generally, no. They're saying, well, we've spent, a lot of time and money and effort making sure everyone can find us on bbc.co.uk and bbc.com. Why would we want to move?
Thank you. Let's have just one more question from Carla, who's got the chat room up there, because I want to make sure we push through to the end so everyone's got a chance.
Hi. The question comes from Danish. So if a company, organization, will get their own GTOD, what will they do with their main brand, .com, .org, .net, .biz, and any other GTOD that gets released? Will they hand them back? Let's say with BBC, will they hand back bbc.com when they get .bbc? I see the reasons for having .bbc, especially with all their brands, but then would they register bbc.newgtods when the new GTODs gets released? If so, why?
You're going to hand your brands back, Sue?
In the future that we're being told will exist, where everyone lives on a branded space, perhaps we might at some point reach a time where we didn't need to have BBC in various other platforms. I'm very sceptical about that, frankly, and certainly at the outcome. There's no question of us handing back bbc.com to anyone. Who would we hand it back to? And if someone else were to use it, would that not confuse our customers? We couldn't possibly do it.
Thank you. I mentioned earlier that Christina spends a lot of her time, when she's not being fearlessly frightening in the GNSO, advising clients, big clients. So I asked her to imagine that all of you are the senior management of a company that she's got to advise pretty quickly at this early stage in the process. I asked her to imagine that she's just got a couple of minutes to say some pithy things to you about what you need to be doing right now.
Thanks, Nick. Of course, now I have to make the standard disclaimer that nothing I say is legal advice. And I should also note that the answer to this question is actually one that can and has taken an entire day with a client. And I think, I think, Sue, that's been your experience as well. It sounds as if it can really take a long time. But if I only have 2 minutes, I guess what I'm going to say, first off, decide. You need to decide what you're going to do. Do you want to be an applicant? Do you want to be an applicant in the first round? Do you not want to be an applicant and you just want to be an objector? Do you not want to be an applicant? You'll wait and see if you're going to be an objector and you're just going to be a registrant and user. Whatever works for your company and your brand, you have to make a decision. You, in much the same way that Sue was talking about, you don't want to be the person who made the decision not to go forward, you also don't want to be the person who unilaterally makes the decision that it's your decision to make. Because the first time that your CEO hears that someone else in your industry or someone else, one of his friends, they've got a new GTLD, he's going to want to know, why didn't we do anything about this? Why didn't I know? In terms of deciding, I think there are definitely things that you need to think about. What is really the value in terms of what is the message that you want to convey with the TLD? How will you use it? Is it something that you would want a generic? And if you want a generic, are you going to run it as an open TLD? Or are you going to try and run it as a community? Is that how you're going to apply? Or are you going to apply for .brand? Because the answers to all of those questions really will determine the path that you have to take if you decide that you are, in fact, going to apply, in both in terms of whether that's going to be in the first round or second. Cost is going to be a huge consideration because you not only need to think about the cost to put the application together, which could involve, in many cases, very complex jurisdictional analyses, tax considerations. You know, for multinational corporations, do you have any transfer pricing issues in terms of if you want to have a new entity be the applicant and then you later want to move it to a different jurisdiction? Insurance, running it, then what do you do with your advertising expenses? If you want to go for a .brand and you really want to drive traffic to it, you're going to have to engage, I think, in a pretty extensive look for marketing campaign. And it could take several years before that pays off. And I think unless and until consumers generally become used to the idea of doing a .brand, I think you will continue to have to make those types of expenditures. Similarly, time. This is not something that you can just decide to do 30 days before the application window opens. I know that I will get a call from someone 30 days before the application window opens, but I'm doing everything I can to avoid that because, to me, this is not – the analogy I use is this is not a trademark registration application where you just fill out the online form in 10 minutes and hit send. This is more along the lines of a securities filing. And if you don't allocate yourself the proper amount of time, you're not going to put together a complete application. Another thing I think is really important is get your team together. You need an internal team. You need an external team. The external team is going to include things like, I mean, the internal team could include people that you wouldn't ordinarily think of, like government affairs, depending upon the TLD that you might want to apply for, or regulatory. Certainly you need your IT people involved. Externally, you would need things like, who is going to run it? Just picking up on what Sue was saying, are you in a position to run it yourself? Even if you are, do you want to? And how are you going to decide who's going to do that? In terms of other areas, tax, insurance, corporate law, one thing that I have been giving a lot of thought to is that if a large company wants to apply for the generic for its industry category, to what extent are there antitrust implications of that if one of the largest market players has control of the generic TLD for the industry? How do you deal with that on the front end? Because you certainly don't want to go through the trouble of applying for it, getting it, and then getting a letter from your relevant regulatory authority. The risks that are involved, and Sue covered many of them, so I won't duplicate them. But I think certainly finding out, even if you think you may be the only entity with your .brand, do the trademark searching to make sure. And frankly, if that may apply to any applicant. Decide how you're going to deal with that because it's entirely possible that the current timing is set up, you may not have a whole lot of time to decide. And you are, I know that I can't spend a lot of time on the objection process. There are certainly going to be circumstances in which you may not want to use it and that you may be better served handling it in court. And I should say that all of this presumes that certain key issues that are still live in the DAG from the perspective of brand owners have been resolved. And I think the key one, I think, for brand owners, independent of the trademark protection issue, well, two really, is the vertical integration and the fact that ICANN reserves the right to redelegate your TLD. No brand owner is comfortable with that.
Okay. So let's jump forward again. Let's suppose it's the day after all the character strings have been published, and at the end of the line we have Debbie Hughes from the International Red Cross, a major not-for-profit organisation. What are you going to do on that day, Debbie?
Other than panic, and other than assume or hope that our organization has made the decision, like what Christina said, I can tell you right now, we haven't. And for a lot of the reasons that Sue and Christina and David have explained, I mean, making sure the right people are at the table to make these decisions, making sure that it makes marketing sense, making sure that the processes that are going to be in place for the establishment of these new GTLDs fit with our model. For example, the vertical integration issue is huge. I mean, one of the benefits, some may say, for a not-for-profit organization to maybe even pursue this would be the ability to create a safe and secure environment where you can control the registration of domain names and perhaps decrease fraud. Well, a lot of my ability to analyze whether or not it makes sense for organizations like mine would be how is the ICANN system going to evolve. So a lot of those decisions still haven't been made. But Nick, let's assume that we've made a decision one way or the other, regardless of whether or not we decide to go forward with a application. We still have to remember that there are other applicants out there, right? And so I'm going to have an enviable task of dividing my life into two parts. One part would be, let's presume that we were going to pursue an application. I get the fun part of dealing with that issue, but at the same time, now there's other applicants out there, some dot brand, some maybe generics, that I've now got to decide, okay, do we want to get engaged in opposing or being concerned about those applications? Are these potential new GTLDs that might be fodder for cyber squatting that I'm going to have to start planning my now resources for when they go to delegation? So looking at that applicant list is going to be vitally important, because if I haven't made or taken the time to prepare myself and my workload, because by the way, this isn't the only thing I do, and a lot of brand owners face that, you know, if my full-time job was managing the domain name portfolio for the American Red Cross, then maybe, you know, this wouldn't be that big of an issue or concern for me, and I'm saying that facetiously, because of course it would be. But I don't. And because I have a limited team and because I have limited resources, it becomes vitally important for me to start planning now to make sure I've got the right people at the table who understand, regardless of whether or not we decide to do a .gtld, what's the budget I'm going to need for doing these this opposition process? What's the budget I'm going to need to make sure that when these new GTLDs go to delegation, am I going to be able to even take care of or take advantage of these rights protection mechanisms that we've all worked so hard to pursue? And I'll talk about a little bit of that more later.
Thank you. Jay Scott.
I just have a question. I'm Jay Scott Evans from Yahoo that I has pondered in my mind. Under the legal precepts as they exist in most jurisdictions today, everything on the right side of the dot is considered to be a generic. What effect does putting your billion-dollar brand on the right side of the dot have to your enforceability rights? I mean, the first time you bring a multimillion-dollar lawsuit in a jurisdiction, are you looking at a 15-year litigation because you have to go to the Supreme Court to get them to claim when it's a brand on the right side of a dot? Because all the trademark offices have regulations and guidelines and examining manuals that say it's generic. So when you're asked that by your business people, what effect, I look at all these brilliant brand protection folks and ask, what effect are you telling your people it has?
I think we're getting some free, very good legal advice here, folks. And I don't see many of you writing it down, so don't blame me in years to come. David Taylor, sitting here, I asked him the same question as I asked Christina earlier. Would you mind imagining that you again are the senior management of a company who's looked at that list and they see that a third party has applied for a character string which is very, very similar or an exact match? So what would you tell them, David?
I'd start with obviously saying that nothing I'm about to say is legal advice, and they'd probably follow up and say the rest of it is a load of rubbish, but anyway, we'll have a go. Certainly, I think if it's close to a valuable trademark, you'd say look carefully at the application that's there. What exactly are they? Have they got in it? What are they intending to do with that application? So that would be the first point, which is something which would be clearly necessary. Then you may well be advising on filing or not filing a legal rights objection, and that in itself, I think, would be quite dependent on the, you know, some of the RPMs that are in place and whether the PDDRP is something which is potent enough to deal with any issues down the line. And if it is potent enough, you may think, okay, we won't file, we'll just let it go through, and that's fine. But if it's not potent enough, then you may be considering, should we be suing and who should we be suing? Should we be suing ICANN? It gets quite interesting, and we'll have to see where those sort of things go, but we'll find the answers out, I think, in a year or so. Was there another thing we'd got?
That's very helpful. I was going to take a straw poll on who'd ever thought of suing ICANN, but I thought it would be unfair. Can I just ask the rest of the panel, anything else that you've thought about for that kind of this time that comes up when the list is published? Anyone got any thoughts on the panel or indeed in the room about the public comment mechanism which has been created? So anyone here can write in and say anything about any applicant, and it will be, well, a question for ICANN perhaps, I'm not quite sure. Is it going to go straight to the evaluators, or will a summary of it from the ICANN staff go to the evaluators? Anyone know? Anyone care to ask about that? Anyone think it's a good mechanism or not so good mechanism? I'm not sure if this means we've got a room full of quislings or not. Christina?
I can certainly see the value. I can also imagine that the volume of public comments that will come in will be staggering, and I'm just assuming that that will be the case. I think of it as kind of the public forum on steroids. And I can certainly see that there might be circumstances in which there is information that really is material to whether or not a third-party application goes in or proceeds that the applicant may not have disclosed, and there may not be any other way for the evaluation panel to learn that information. Having said that, if I were advising clients on this point, I'd make absolutely sure, beyond 100%, that all of the information that I was going to put forward in a public comment period was true. And I think ICANN is really going to need to make sure that they are set up in such a way so that they can process those public comments in a way that doesn't further delay the examination process.
Thank you. We've got two comments. Let's take Philip first. Philip, can you be quite quick? Because we've got some chat room ones as well.
Sure.
Thank you.
Philip Shepherd from AIM, but speaking in personal capacity. I mean, I think, as we all know, I mean, the reason for the public comment process is very much outside of our immediate world here. It's looking at things like maybe community applications and attempting to validate whether or not they are true community applications. So I think there's some good reasons why they're built into the process, and in a non-discriminatory process, you can't have that. But I think Christina's point is valid, actually. I mean, I represent a number of famous branded goods companies, and there ain't many of them who will not find somewhere a brand name sucks type site on the internet, or some disgruntled customer somewhere around. And we've certainly seen the ICANN public comments process heartily abused in the past in all sorts of ways. And I fear that in our field for dot brand applications, that may well be the case. It's noise in the system. Hopefully that can just be filtered out. But it is a watch out.
Carla, you've got questions from the chat room?
I have two questions. One is from John.
Given that there are 28,762 names, some are brands but some are generics, that are registered across .com, net, org, biz, info, mobi, Asia, tel, are brand owners more likely to concentrate on the big three, com, net, org, or the CCTODs rather than new GTODs?
Well, I guess ICANN's gambling they're going to go for the new GTLDs, but I've got no answer. Charlotte.
I think from a brand owner's point of view that until we see how consumers are going to respond, the emphasis is still going to be on the ConNet org that we all focus on at the moment. There are other GTLDs that have been out there for a long time, Biz Info, for example, which most of us aren't really looking at and certainly aren't encouraging our internal clients to register in. And I don't see that changing immediately, at least until consumers have got used to the new system.
Thank you. Thank you. Carla.
That's fine. Does the panel support that the brand owner is able to manage the registry infrastructure as well as the sales front, for example, the registrar?
No. Richard, thank you.
Certainly from our point of view, there was never a doubt that we would not be dealing as a registrar ourselves. We would seek to find a partner who could provide that service for us. We look at all times what is critical to our business and the things that we outsource. So certainly this is something that we would outsource.
Thank you. Jean-Christophe.
Jean-Christophe Vigne from Ibron Services. And this question is actually not for the panel, because we're fortunate enough to, if you're here, you're aware of what's going on and you have some interests. My comment was more following David's point on many brand owners are still not aware of the issue and still don't know what they want to do about it, for those who are aware. Now, the example I'm going to give will show my age, but most of you will remember a little site called McDonald's.com, which in 1994 was cybersquatted. It's one of the first cybersquatting case, just because McDonald's didn't care at that point enough about the internet to get its own domain name secured. In 1994, it was hard to predict how useful the web will be. But if you look at Alexa.com today, McDonald's is one of the 1,000 most visited sites daily on the internet. The point I'm trying to make here is, as Christina pointed out, new GTLDs are not for everyone. This is a global discussion for legal, marketing, technical, all kind of aspects, and anyone can say no. But I do think it's a pity that some people at the moment say, I don't care. Because nobody knew 3 years ago that Twitter, Facebook, or before that the web would be so useful to your brand and to the way you talk to your customers. It's really hard to predict the future, but it's really easy to blame you for a past oversight. It will be really easy in 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's go forward again. So supposing it's... Oh, beg your pardon. Oh, that's very sorry, I missed you.
No, no problem. Len Levens, ISOC Belgium Security. Two things. One, I can imagine any big international firm taking its own name or brand or whatever, not using it publicly, but using it in their private networks, and using it to limit access to those networks, because they will control access to that network through their DNS and all the other things, which would be harder on the public network. And the second, and then you can even later switch to a more public use if one decision like that marketing-wise comes along. The second big question, security-wise, is if you are going ahead and you are choosing an operator, by which certification, quality, auditing, and permanent control you will choose your operator. And who is reliable if your central DNS for your root, your gets hacked? Big way. You will be world news all over the world.
Anyone like to come back on that? Caroline.
Yeah, I think it's a free world in a way. If a company decides to file for an extension for its own use, they're free to do it. Someone mentioned that maybe a company will do a defensive registration. I doubt that because it's a lot of investment and this would be a bit silly. But if you want to use for your own use and then use it externally afterwards, I mean, this is free and it's really, for me, it's really the internet world. It's the first to come, first serve in a way. So this is really the same. And then the provider you choose, you probably do an audit, benchmarking, whatever, and then you take the risk. And I agree, you take a risk, but it's like, you know, when you're choosing a hosting provider, you also take a risk. So I don't really see an issue with that.
Thank you. Charlotte, can I ask you a question? How do you think that online marketing is going to change in the age of the new GTLDs? I mean, Orange is a very forward-looking company, so any views on that?
I think initially the answer is probably not a lot. I think there's going to be a transition period in which we will need to educate both our consumers and our internal customers as to possible uses of the new GTLDs. I certainly foresee a big battle with our internal marketeers on a country or territory basis or an enterprise basis to give up the goodwill that they have already built in the domain names that exist. However, in the long term, the ideal position that we'd all be moving to is being able to run everything under your single dot brand. I agree with what you said, Christine, that I think it's unlikely that you're going to invest this much money and the ongoing annual fees to keep a dot brand going simply for defensive purposes. I think we're all about building and driving brand value, in which case if you have an asset that could become a mark of value and a mark of quality so that consumers would come to recognise that something that is dot orange is genuine and that there is no risk of phishing or any other malicious acts underneath it, then that would be the ideal position that we are all aiming to get to. The question is, how long does it take you to get there? In the meantime, I think that defensive registrations, which we're all used to doing, is going to be an ongoing factor, and that means at the second level under any new generics as well. Until we know how consumers are going to treat these new generics, using the McDonald's.com example, I don't think any responsible brand owner is just going to say, well, I'll wait and see, because you don't know how long or how much it will cost to recover the name at present. So on a longer-term view, yes, there is a lot of potential value, and from a marketing perspective, there's a lot of potential value, but it will take a long time, I think, to educate internally and externally as to how to get there.
Thank you. Anthony, did you write that for Charlotte?
I'll happily take credit for it. First, I'd like to congratulate you all for doing so well with someone who's in the front row. I have two questions, and they're real questions. The first has to do with distribution networks, and I'd like to ask you if any of you have looked at a GTLD as a way of validating your distributors. For instance, if you're a car company, you have dealerships, or you're a sports league and you have teams and so on. Sorry. And the second question is having to do with the background check that's in the rules. Most large companies are, of course, involved in commerce all the time and have a lot of transactions and tend to end up getting sued at some point or another, and sometimes they lose. And so banks, for instance, have been found to be fraudulent in certain cases and so on. So I'm wondering if you think that affects your chances for succeeding in your applications. Thank you.
Just coming back to your first question, looking at distributors within the RIBA, that's essentially what the RIBA is. It's made up as a member organisation, so it has architects as individuals and practices who are chartered practices as well. So we see this as a way of using the procedures and the policies to only allow access to those individuals who can demonstrate that they've achieved the qualification, whether it be in the UK or other countries that would form part of a confederated bid. So we see that as really powerful for consumer protection. So that's exactly why, certainly why I'm here.
And anyone like to comment on the background checks?
Just once again, for the architects, that's relatively easy. It's a professional qualification. If you're not on the register, that would form one of the parts of the background checks.
My question is rather to you as the applicant for the TLD. Presumably, I think you can't have been convicted of fraud or bribery or terrorism or indeed...
Fortunately, I haven't been.
I actually didn't mean you personally. I meant the company itself. And if you see, I assume that it's aimed at individuals, but I'm wondering if you think that there's a chance that it would be aimed at a company.
Thank you. Yep, we have a response.
I have a question. Does that mean that Google could not apply for .Google because of the court decision in Italy that found them guilty of violating their national laws on privacy?
I would say yes, I can.
Could you say that again?
Well, and if Google can't, does that mean someone else could?
Huh? I was just going to say that's under appeal.
How you doing? TLD Assets in New York. First of all, thank you all for being here. This has been a group of expertise that I certainly haven't seen yet, so it's been very informative. My main question is to follow up on the young man who reported earlier said something like 22% of companies were thinking about applying for TLDs, and only 16% really weren't aware at this time. I believe it was somewhere in that ballpark. From my experience, I've talked to very few people who really have any idea what this is when I've talked to executives and that kind of thing. And to the best of my knowledge, there's only really one brand in the world that's actually come out and said that they're going to do this. So I just wanted to drill down a little bit more about that concept and see what you guys feel like. How are companies researching this? Is it really more tech or marketing people that are trying to stay on the forefront and protect their companies against really missing out, or are CEOs really aware of this and pursuing this actively at this time? What's your feeling on that?
Thanks for your question, because it's a good one. I think two things that I would mention. First being the challenge from a communicating standpoint to our senior executives is that this isn't a domain name, this is a registry. What does that mean? Because the business clients that we have to talk to, they don't understand any of this. And so that's part of the challenge. And I think the other thing, too, is a lot of the organizations that I've been talking to, as well as for-profit companies, they were kind of thinking that this was going to go away. You know, they could kind of put their heads down in the sand and, oh, that's something for later, that's something for later, and they kept pushing it off. And even though, you know, a lot of us have been aggressively trying to put that in the forefront, you know, this is a true thing that may be happening, you've got to wrap your hands around it. I think from a communicating standpoint, it's really a challenge to organizations who don't quite get it, and then they're kind of also hoping it's not going to happen. And now they're, you know, we seem to be in this state where you've got to really start taking a hard look at these issues. And the timing now, it's becoming more and more crucial. And, you know, a lot of companies aren't going to come right out and say, yes, we're going to do it. You know, Canon did what they did for whatever reason they chose to. But I think a lot of the organizations I've talked to, there's still more benchmarking that they want to do amongst themselves, try to figure out strategically what they want to do. And, I mean, honestly, I don't think a lot of organizations have figured it out yet. And, I mean, I think those statistics that Fred shared are just wonderful, because it doesn't make me feel so bad anymore, because I was thinking, well, gosh, why are we taking so long? But I think it's a challenge that everybody's having.
I guess just to follow up briefly, so just if anybody wants to comment, would you expect to see a significant number of applications in this first round, which most people think will happen in the next year from major brands?
Well, let's just hold that question if we can, because at the end of it, I'm going to ask everyone. So have a think now, actually. I'd just like to take a straw poll at the end of this on how many new GTLDs will be applied for, you think. Okay, so I'm going to ask you all at the end.
Okay.
Is that okay?
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Adam.
Thanks. Adam Smith from World Trademark Review magazine. In this whole debate, there are a lot of people that seem to be presuming one way or another the way that consumers will react to new GTLDs, whether it's brand protection and trademark protection people, assuming that that consumers will be confused and so on, or on the other hand, domain people or people who are for new GTLDs saying how great they will be and these sorts of things. I just wonder, from some of the big brands maybe represented on the panel or anyone else, are we asking consumers this question? Has there been any research done that's publicly available into what consumers think about this?
Charlotte.
This actually follows on, I think, from the last question as well. I have actually only read one bit of research into what consumers think about this that was, I think, published in The Guardian about a year back. And there wasn't a lot of knowledge about this from consumers, and it wasn't a particularly enthusiastic response from their point of view. I think the question of making sure whatever we do is user-friendly is something that is an issue across all domain names. But it's one of the problems that we as brand owners have going back to our boards and our chairmen, in that there has been very little research into, A, what consumers think about this, and also what the return of investment are, what the costs are. It's very difficult to go back and say, I need a lot of money, but I don't know when I need it or how much it will be or what returns you're going to get for your investment.
Thank you. Sue, have you got a... additional thing to say?
Just a quick one. I was also going to say, I would suggest that this is something that ICANN ought to have been studying before they launched this process, rather than anyone being asking this question now. There's been we keep being told that this is going to increase competition, that there's a desire for this and so on. Where is the study that shows us that? And where was that at the outset of the process, rather than, perhaps thinking about doing it now?
In fairness, I should say that there is a new economic study. It doesn't do everything you say, but there has been some, it looks to me anyway, I don't know how many people have read it, that significant efforts are being made in that direction, but probably not for consumer research.
So just a follow-up. So first of all, thanks for calling me a young man, because, at 47, I don't often get called a young man, so I really appreciate that. But, this is definitely a skewed set of results. There's 92 people who actually have the wherewithal to hire a corporate domain name registrar, so this isn't, your average audience. And then I wanted to just amplify something that you said a second ago, which is great. I think ease of use is something that actually is going to come from this, but with respect to IDNs and international domain names, because you have a whole, host of people who, would prefer probably to type in their own language on their own, native language keyboards, and, GTLDs don't really service them. So,
thank you. Carla, some more.
Hi. The question comes from Danish. But the whole point of non-confusion would be having .bbc, so anything not under .bbc would not be official BBS stuff. So BBS equals BBC, so he was talking about BBC. Basically making the point that for the consumer, if they find something under .bbc, they would be certain to be BBC.
Yes, I mean, that's certainly an argument, and it's something that's, obviously under consideration. But I would keep coming back to the point that at the moment we know, and I would say most of our public know, that bbc.co.uk is where the public service stuff is, and if you want information about a particular programme, it's on bbc.co.uk/programme name. So why is it then that there are still people squatting on other, on programname.com, programname.co.uk, bbcsomething.com. The fact is there's already one source for the legitimate content, and somehow people are confused. So how is the .bbc really going to change that? maybe it will, but, you know, people are confused at the moment.
Thank you. Caroline.
Yeah, this is coming back to what I said at the start. It's that I don't think consumers really know where the brand is coming from. There are so many brands out there that are belonging to major companies, and we are not going to reduce that. So we're really asking a lot to marketing if they have to promote the sub-brand or the brand of the product and the company name attached to that. And this is why I think either we go for 500 new GTLDs, for example, if I take .KitKat, .Nesquik, .Nespresso, whatever, all the brands Nestle is owning, or we just go for .Nestle, but then we have a problem in communication because we really have to change our communication line. And I think it's really the point of Sue, is that it's too easy to say, just take your company name and then consumer will know it's you.
Thank you. Anthony. Oh, sorry, Christina.
I would just follow up on that in terms of some of the corporate marketing folks that I've talked to say, you know, yes, it's theoretically possible, but they anticipate having to spend tens of millions of dollars to get there. And, you know, in large part, that's why some of them are still trying to figure out whether that mathematical ratio works for them.
I think it may be useful information. It's not exactly on point, but there have been quite a bit of research done in CCTLDs about what drives registration volume. And it seems to correlate quite highly. This is done for the .Asia launch, and it looked at the CCTLDs in the Asia-Pacific region. And registration volume correlates quite highly with GDP, of course, with internet penetration, and most of all with policy. So, for instance, you will have a large number of people in Hong Kong registering names, but very few under .com.hk. Instead, they'll go to .com. So ease of use and ease of registration seems to be a major factor in how many registrations there are. When you're considering if you want to open your TLD to the public, that is certainly something to consider. I'm sure there's a temptation to have various restrictions, but unless you are comfortable with the small number of registrants, that's something you might want to look at. Thank you.
Jump forward to Richard on this, because Richard, do you think that a new GTLD could make a positive contribution to the bottom line, to your bottom line, or to the bottom line of other applicants?
This is it's the either the $64 million question or the minus $64 million question. I think we can all expect the market for domain names to continue to expand. There's a continued drive for that. But at some point, there has to be a limit. I think there'll be a number of organizations that will look at this speculatively and look more away from the brand toward generic terms to see, is this something we should go for? Can we sell multiple domains that will actually generate huge sums of money and we can all retire? I think that's unlikely. I think the brand position is a stronger position. There's a reason for that. And the multitude of options that will be available should all the generic terms be licensed as global top-level domain names means that the price for each registration will have to come down. And that will make it financially very, very difficult to get any return on some of the very top-level names that might be used. So commercially, I think we've already heard, the cost of actually setting one of these up will be very, very high. You have to be very certain that there will be a return commercially, and that commercial gain will be, for us, certainly for us, long-term.
Carla, something from the chat room?
Yes, from John. Will new GTODs be too dependent on brand protection registrations for a major part of the revenue, and how would brand owners feel about this?
Okay, line up, folks. Who wants to go first? who wants to answer that one first? Charlotte, come on.
Two words, yes and bitter.
Caroline, what about you? How do you feel?
Yeah, I think having everybody is making money up here, because as lawyer we will get more work and registrar will get more domains to register, and there will be new registries and lawyers will be really happy. So I think here in the room everybody will be happy because we will have more work. Whether it's really needed, whether it's mandatory, whether it's urgent that we have that, well, I open the question.
Thank you. Anyone else on the panel like to come in on that? No? Okay.
Hello, Philippe Lankert, Internet Investment Group. Not very acquainted with brands, but I had a little thought about it. I'm not a Latin thinker, so TLD I also think of Arab or whatever. I looked at two car brands, BMW, the known Dutch German one, and Citroën. And Citroën is automatically being translated in Latin and all kinds of languages. BMW has luck, because it is not. So even if you think not about .BMW, .Citroën, do you see differences for several brands? Does Citroën have a difficult time because it has this special E and it is automatically translated in Arab? And does BMW have an easy time because it's almost impossible to translate around the world? How do you see that?
Anyone on the panel care to comment? Anyone else care to comment? Sue.
All I was going to say was, for the company like Citroën, which has uses translated versions, yeah, there's a big challenge for them there, isn't there? Because then, you know, they're not looking at maybe one branded TLD, they're looking at, you know, however many. And that would be the case, I think, for many companies. But it also applies, I think, in the generics as well, as we've been talking about, you know. There might be a generic for .food or something, but there'll probably be a number of others in different languages, and so it's just all more cost.
So some brands might be lucky, like I think BMW has an easy time and Citroën has a difficult time.
Okay, please.
I'm Jean-Paul Bichu from NameShield. Our customer is Citroën, and they are having a very hard time getting really confused about what's going on. One thing is puzzling me is the fact that we've been we've been trying to work in this industry for 16 years now, and we still see a lot of brand owners that are not have made the choice to sit down and analyze and put down a strategy for a defensive strategy or a registration strategy. And I think it's confusing people on the internet a lot, and brand owners are really confused about what's going on. So and Citroën is really confused too, and we're confused because we don't have the right tools as of today to give them the right advice. So we're coming here to get the right information. Yes, we do. Okay.
Sorry, we have another question, please.
I'm Dwi Elfrida from Indonesia. I'm from Ministry of ICT of Indonesia. Actually, this is not my field, but according to the problem that happened in Indonesia for banking company, it was happened. There is a big banking in Indonesia, BCA, Bank Central Asia. It was happened fraud. There is www.clickbyc.bca.com, and there is to www.clickbyc.bca.com. Because of the problem, government strongly suggests all banking use .id. Use TLD, CCTLD as their top level domain, and their name of banking become a second level domain. My question is, if this matter heard by a company of banking because I know that Indonesia banking is very international. If they want to make their own name become TLD, for example, .bca, on the other hand, as government, we strongly suggest them to use CCTLD to protect them and to watching the, all their transactions by banking transaction banking online. So what then happened? I just want to share this problem to all of you. Even I don't know what is the solution that might be possible for this, because I don't really agree. I try to find the better words. I prefer if banking is under watching of government institution. Even as I know .ma for their banking, the banking must be get approval from Ministry of Finance to register their domain name. Yes.
Thank you. Would anyone like to comment on that? No? Christina.
I guess the only thing I'll say is not really an answer to your question. I apologize for that. But I think the application of new GTLDs, whether they're in Latin or IDNs, to the banking and financial services sector raises huge issues that, frankly, we could talk about from now until Friday. But I do think it's going to be, I mean, you're exactly right. How do you balance that? What role do governments have? What mechanisms does ICANN have to deal with those types of issues if somebody who doesn't have a bank applies for .bank or, you know, a bank name, et cetera? So, I mean, I would actually suggest that perhaps, to turn the question back to you, is that perhaps this is something that within relevant governments, that the various Treasury departments and other regulatory agencies responsible for banking, maybe that this would be an opportunity for them to work out a solution that could be applied or adopted, you know, voluntarily, of course, by financial institutions in their own countries. And then you would have something that would not only be uniform, but would also be less susceptible to fraud.
Thank you. We've got another couple of questions, and there are a couple of things that I know members of the panel would like to bring up. So, Carla, thank you.
That's the last question from our remote participants. It comes from Ryan Katz. Economic study recommends discrete, limited rounds of new GTODs. What is the likelihood that this is the case?
Yeah, go on, Carla, you tell us. Phil, please.
Yeah, Philip Corwin asking in my completely personal capacity, and this may be more of a marketing question than a legal question, but I asked the panel because you've been talking to a lot of different companies. Let's say 5 years from now, looking into the crystal ball, and I'll use consumer electronics, kind of that category, because we know .canon. Let's say there's a bunch of several applicants in that category, whether it's .canon, .sony, .apple, and that one of them, and maybe it's Apple because they have sort of this cult-like following. I don't know if they're planning to apply, but maybe one of them is fantastically successful in building a brand TLD and in the process making a big impression and changing consumer psychology about how to search on the internet, and to some extent, would you suspect that if there is a breakthrough in a big consumer brand category, that winner would have created a model that others could replicate, or that would be more the exception that proves the rule type of success?
Tricky looking forward like that, but one thing we see in almost every industry is innovation is usually copied and replicated. There are always innovators who are successful and others that aren't. The successful model is the survival of the fittest. So I thoroughly expect there is nothing different here in what's going on with this technology. It's the same as every other technology, every other industry. Where something works, it will be repeated.
Thank you. Now, I promised both Christina and David, well, in fact, I bribed them. I said, if they would appear on this panel, because there's a lot of detail in this and they're both expert in it, I said to them that because brands are going to be dependent upon the rights protection mechanisms that are being built into the process, then I would give them a free shot at ICANN. I would allow them to make one suggestion to the rights protection mechanisms that have been proposed so far that they think should be urgently addressed before the final applicant guidebook is produced. So, who wants to go first? You've got about 10 seconds each.
Just this is not a question, but I won't show the phone. Somebody left the phone in the back. And if you're missing your phone, I'm not going to describe it because you got to describe it for yourself. I'm going to take it to the ICANN office or give it to somebody to take to the ICANN office. But if there's anybody here right now that can describe it, that it belongs to...
Is it black?
It's yours.
Thanks, Jim. Sorry. Okay, guys, your next...
Okay. Yep.
What would you change, David?
I'll go first because it's always worth letting Christina have the last word. I've learned that. I think on the URS, the question of what the R is now, is it rapid or is it redundant? I think it's possibly turned into a poor man's UDRP, and I'm also concerned that it really isn't that fast. And if you look at the EUDRP, which has come up, the first case on the EUDRP took 35 days start to finish, and a URS can take 47 days now. That's my
comment. Is that in the record, folks? Okay, Christina.
Just on the URS?
Whatever you like.
I only get one or one for each mechanism?
You get one.
I'm going I mean, it's hard. I think if I only get one, then I would actually do the one that has never happened, namely some mechanism that will address the concern of brand owners so that they can avoid having to do defensive registrations.
Does the panel agree? The panel agrees with that one. Right, so the very last thing we're going to do is do a straw poll, and I'm really interested to see this. So I'm going to go 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, and completely crazy. How many new GTLDs are going to be applied for? Who thinks up to 100? New GTLDs in the first round, Latin and IDN, anyone who pays 185,000 in the first round. So a handful for up to 100. Who thinks more like 200? Who thinks 300? 300 in the 300 agree? Yeah? Keep watching, folks. 300. Who thinks 400? Who thinks 500? And is there anyone here crazy enough to think over 500, which is... We're done. I just want to thank this panel, some of whom have come all the way for this. I think it's really useful to get brand experts like this sitting on a panel talking about something else other than just the minutiae of rights protection details. So please give them a big round of applause. Thank you.